Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
But come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen back to Eden, and now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk somehow declared for at least a week.
What a magnificent day of Gaelic football, and what a magnificent day for Gaelic football. There hasn't been a Sunday like it in the modern era of the GAA. Two massive underdogs win against all odds, and there are magnificent, joyous scenes. Grown men crying their eyes out on national television. Colin O'Riordan and David Power down in Cork, and Mickey Graham and Raymond Gallagher up in Armagh, overcoming the moment with what they had achieved against the backdrop of COVID. If anyone had any doubt just what the provincial championships mean, then last Sunday offered full, undeniable evidence. And it turns out that things like history and tradition and emotion and raw hunger do matter after all. Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined today by Oisín McConville, the former Armagh footballer, and by Ciarán Sheehan, the Cork footballer, who is here wearing deepest black. We're going to do a couple of things today. Later in the show, we're going to pick out the best player in each provincial championship and also the best newcomer in each province. But there is only one place to start today, and it's with a Munster final where Tipperary emerged as Munster champions for the first time since 1935. We're joined by Declan Brown, a man considered to be Tipperary's greatest ever footballer. Declan, what did yesterday mean to Tipperary football people?
It's incredible, Paul. 85 years is a long time. A lot of people have tried, and a lot of players, a lot of administrators, a lot of kit men, they've all been down this road, and we've always got the claps on the backs for being so close in a couple of occasions. And like, to finally get over the line is it's incredible. You know, the only pity is there was none of us there to witness it, you know. But other than that, like, we won't give it back all the same. But it's been incredible the last couple of hours, you know. And I can only imagine what the players are feeling.
Did you shed a tear yesterday yourself?
Unbelievable. Kicked every ball in the sitting room as well, Paul. It was, the start we got was incredible, you know, and I think we couldn't have asked for anything better. And I think it kind of flustered Cork a bit. They went back into their shells. So once we got that start, and our lads were on a bit of a high, and they're willing to play ball. And I think, you know, to be honest, there was only one winner after that start for me. I know it's easy to say it after, but to be so nervous, you know, watching it, because Tip football is Tip football. At the end of the day, we're prone to doing something calamitous, and it's never over till the final whistle goes. But you know, to see Colin McShotnessy coming out with that ball at the end and the whistle going was, you know, something we'll never forget.
Did you think Tipperary would win?
100% yes. And again, I've said it on record there as well, that once, no disrespect to Cork, but once Kerry were beaten, I felt we had a great, great chance. And, you know, I didn't think we'd have a chance of beating Kerry. But I just feel that the Cork, you know, they were on a potential banana skin after taking Kerry out. And it was all depends how they were going to get themselves motivated to take on Tip in the final. But, like, our guys have been there. Those young lads of All-Ireland minor medals. They've played in All-Ireland 21 finals. They've played in Croke Park in 16. So, like, there's quality in that team. It's just to get the consistency. And to get our top players playing at the highest level the whole time. And that happened yesterday. So it just showed you we're a match for anyone.
Why did Tipperary win?
Why did Tipperary win? I suppose it's a combination of a lot of things, Paul. Like, Cork were poor as well, you know, there's no point in saying any different. And I think when it came down to final straight, when you saw the Cork forwards, some of them not wanting to shoot, I felt that once we kept our discipline and we didn't concede frees, we were going to win the match. The history of the whole Bloody Sunday, the occasion, you know, the jerseys, everything, Colin O'Riordan coming back, there was a lot of factors. The COVID is an unbelievable disaster for everyone in the world, but it kept Michael Quinn living, Liam Casey around for us this year as well. Other than that, we'd been playing championship in the middle of summer. We wouldn't have had those guys. We wouldn't have had Colin O'Riordan. So there's a lot of factors there, Paul. You know, and look, you know, you need a bit of luck on the day as well. But, you know, saying that, it's something that's coming with the last 10, 15 years. Some people could say it's over 100 years or 85 years coming. But, you know, it's hard to pinpoint one particular thing. But it's just, I think, the big thing for me, Paul, is we deserve this. No one can say it was a fluke. No one can say there was a silly goal or a silly sending off or a silly black card, because we go back to 16 against Mayo and we still talk about Robbie Kiley's black card. You know, so we, at least there's nothing like that to take away from the victory, you know. So it was a combination of a lot of things, but again, we don't really care.
In preparing for this game, if you were Tipperary and you looked back at the run of defeats, what made this different though? Like, why? What is different between this Tipperary team and the teams, for example, that you played on that came close?
It's hard to, you can't really equate it, Paul, because, you know, you look at the team we played against Cork in 2002, like, that was an unbelievable team. So we came up against great teams as well. Like, we had brilliant teams ourselves, but we just happened to come up against great Kerry teams and great Cork teams, you know. But it's just, I suppose, the belief, like, we won a Munster minor title in 95. And we thought that this was going to be the next generation and the golden generation that will drive Tip football on. Three lads went on to play a senior football championship after that. You know, so that was a big negative for us.
Whereas what happened to the rest of them?
Just lost interest, didn't bother playing again, went playing hurling. It was just one of those groups that you thought you might hold together, but it never worked out like that. And we competed in a Munster final in 98 under 21 football and should have beaten Kerry. So that was a dream for us that we'd bring those guys through. But it never materialised. And plus, there was also super players playing senior football for Tip at the time. So it's very hard to shift them. So this group has a lot of experience, even though it's underage, but they have a lot of experience of beating Cork and beating Kerry at underage level, which we didn't have growing up. We always got beaten by the Corks and the Kerry. So they were just, it was just meant to be as well, Paul. You know, you have to, you know, with the year that was in it, the weekend that was in it, it was made for us to do something historical, and I'm delighted we did.
I presume that delight is tempered with a small bit of envy.
Oh, I'm jealous as hell, Paul. There's no point in denying it. You'd love to be there. You'd love to be part of it. You'd love to be playing, you know, and I think every Tip footballer will feel the same. But like, the satisfaction you get from seeing this happen, it overrides that. We all had our day, so that you can look back all you want, but we dreamed of this. Like, I dreamed of being part of it. I dreamed playing in Munster finals, and you know, but regardless of what happened, once we got over the line, I think every Tip footballer is just so emotional and so proud of that group, because they've given us so much. They give so much joy over the last 10, 15 years. You know, like, I'll never forget 2016 as long as I live, even though we won nothing. 2011, that minor final win was, you know, to be in Croke Park to witness that was unbelievable. So it's just a pity we weren't there yesterday to wreck Cork. But, you know, it's we'll always be jealous, Paul. No matter, in every way of life, we'll always like to turn back the clock and be part of something special. You know, that's only natural. But to say, you know, we cried, texting all my mates, ringing my mates and previous teammates, you know, it's
yeah, was that going on yesterday? Was that going on yesterday?
During the match and after the match, before the match. Like, as I said, the whole weekend was built up to something special, and rightly so. You know, and I was delighted to see Conor Sweeney saying that the players were well in tune for this. They didn't get carried away with all that. But as ex-players, like, we were texting and ringing, and, you know, I'd say we missed half some of the matches by texting each other and wondering what we'd do next, or will we hold on? And, you know, so it was great. It was great. And, it, you know, I read an article in the Examiner a few weeks back, I think it was Joe Cavan and Darragh O'Shea, and they said that you lose contact with players, you just go off to do different things. And same with tip football. But yesterday brought us all back together again, you know, for this special occasion. And it's nice to get texts, and there's a small community, and we know each other well, and we're all in it for the better good. We'll give out and we'll whinge about players and we'll, why this fella didn't do that and all that. But when it comes together on a day like yesterday, it's super to be involved in.
Kieran, at what stage did you realise that Cork were in serious trouble yesterday?
About 2 minutes into the game, Paul. It was literally from the moment the ball was thrown in, I think, and we spoke about this last week in relation to Cork being, you know, the guys that were going to dictate the game. That didn't happen. That didn't happen at all. I think Tip got off to an unbelievable start. And as I said, like, it was a case of you know, hunt or be hunted. And Cork were certainly hunted by Tip right from when the ball was thrown in. And look, to be fair, I think, look, firstly, I suppose just the congratulations to Tip. It was amazing to be there in relation to the whole occasion itself. Tip were by far the better team throughout the whole game. They outplayed Cork, I suppose, in every aspect of the game, really. And you touched on it there in relation to the emotion attached to it. It was just, you could just see how much it meant to Tipperary players, but Tipperary people as well. You know, there were some media people there, you know, that got really, you know, excited at the end of the game. You know, the interviews we saw, the emotion that was there in the interview itself. And it was great to see, you know, from a whole GA perspective that, you know, tip football is alive and well. And, you know, it was a tricky position to be in, you know, and we saw it from Kerry a few weeks back, you know, and now Cork on the tail end of it, you know, from the other side being the favourites going into the game. And it's a tough position to be in for players and management. You know, management can say everything they want. You know, we talked about psychology of the game, you know, going into it, going in with the right mindset. You can say everything you can possibly say about making them aware of that Tip were going to come hard. And we knew that. Yet we didn't respond the way we would want to. And look, the moral of the story.
Why didn't you?
I think it was a mixture of a couple of, I think the biggest thing for me is that our experience. We had a lot of younger guys, you know, starting yesterday and on the squad. I spoke about that as being an advantage previously, and it can be seen as an advantage. But on the big stage, it's a Munster final. There's a Munster medal on the line. You know, guys in key positions, you know, just a little bit raw, you know, turned over the ball a couple of times in pivotal probably times of the game. And Tip had the experience, had the composure to, you know, respond and I suppose act on our turnovers and punish us for it. And that ended up being the difference. I think Tip were in control of the game from the start to the finish. And as I said, absolutely well deserved.
Is it more than that though? You said last week on the show here that people were saying that it would be typical of Cork footballers to beat Kerry and then to lose to Tipperary.
Yeah, I did say that, and that was the message that was going around. And I'll just give you a small example. A player, I was speaking to a player on the Cork panel last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. It was a couple of days after the Kerry game, maybe 2 or 3 days after the Kerry game. And he visited his aunt who's in his bubble out in the country, you know, next door neighbor, went in to visit the aunt. And this was maybe 3 or 4 days after the Kerry game. And she had the Kerry game on the TV. And he had to ask her to turn the Kerry game off because he was after, he's trying to separate him and move on from this game that took up so much, I suppose, physical and mental preparation for lead up to it. And now he's trying to get away from it. And I think this generation, I think it's very hard to avoid. It is a challenge. But I said this before, Dublin do it very well, for example. If you can separate yourself from it and completely just go out and perform consistently to the way you want to perform, that's what everyone's aiming towards. Cork didn't do it yesterday. It's a massive learning curve for this group of players. As I said, there's a mix of, you know, guys that are just on the panel, their first year on the panel, they made their senior debuts. There's some good learning from it. And I think, look, you'll just have to sit back and accept that you didn't show up How do we respond? I would imagine we're going to review the game. We're going to look at areas that we can improve, but it's about looking to next year now, unfortunately, just the way it's gone. But as I said, that's just the way it's panned out.
When it comes down to it, though, if we leave the psychology to one side, is it not something different again, though? Did Tipperary not have the better footballers, purely and simply? Who did Cork have to match Sweeney, to match Quinlivan, to match O'Riordan, to match Fahey centre-back?
Yeah, look, I think Tipperary are a very talented football team. I do think that the talent is there in Cork to match that of Tipperary's. I've seen it, Paul. I've seen it. And I mentioned it, like, as I said, I joined last November and I've seen it in games. I've seen it in trainings, the talent that this group of players have. But it's about putting it together and getting consistency from it, which clearly isn't there yet. There's been a lot of change in this Cork group over the last number of years, in between players, management, everything. So it's about getting the gel right now, I think, with this core group of players. Look, obviously, there's going to be talent coming through from minor level. That minor team that won the All-Ireland last year, you know, you start to see some more, you know, guys coming through from that squad. And again, as I said, you get exposure to senior football. It's a big step up from under 20, for example, to senior football this year. Guys have got that exposure. I think the talent's there. There's no question about it. As I said, Tip outclassed Cork yesterday in every aspect of the game, tactically and ability-wise. They just played to their strengths. Conor Sweeney, Quinlivan, as you said, they're just, you know, they're playing with confidence. You know, Quinlivan was putting points over, you know, from the sideline. Sweeney was, you know, just turning, kicking off a step. You know, these type of guys, like, I hope they really push on now. They're in a semi-final of an All-Ireland. And for that team, and just watching them, sitting back and watching them yesterday, how structured, organised they were, I'm sure David will have them well-drilled coming into the next game. But I just hope for this team that they can, you know, really put it up to Mayo in this semi-final and potentially get a result.
Is the defeat of Kerry now completely wasted?
It's a good question. That's a really good question. From my perspective, it is. I think, and I'm only saying this because, Paul, when we spoke about Cork before this Kerry game, I said that Cork need to be winning games, and performing and not winning isn't good enough. I'd imagine there's plenty of Kerry people that are kind of, you know, sitting back in their seats now after the game yesterday and kind of saying they didn't push on. That'll give us another bit of an edge going into next year again, if we meet them, you know. So I think that there's a little bit of an element of, yes, wasted effort and time put into that. But again, we still reviewed the game, saw where areas we can grow, areas that, you know, that we played well, really well in against Kerry in terms of possession and time on the ball that we just didn't do against Tip yesterday. So, look, an element of it is wasted time, but there's certainly some growth areas to be taken from it. As I said, Cork need to be winning games of football. That's the bottom
line. Deep down, did you actually think that Cork would lose? Or that Cork would actually not beat Tipperary when it came down to it in a Munster final, having beaten Kerry? Deep down.
Did I think it? No, I thought Cork would win. I thought Cork would win yesterday.
Did you fear losing?
I feared losing. Yeah, and as I said, we spoke about this last week. I was worried. And you asked me, was I worried? And I said I was worried. Because I knew the quality of this Tip team. I knew that Tip didn't fear Cork. But deep down, Paul, I thought Cork would be able to dig deep and get a result out. It was a huge test for this team to be able to back it up and be more consistent. Unfortunately, it didn't work out the way they had planned. And look, that's the moral of the story, really. Look, as I said, Cork, I would have said, would have had the ability to beat this Tip team. They didn't perform, and that's just the way it panned out.
Oisín, over the last couple of weeks, like, it really was looking like this punditry thing wasn't suiting you at all. Some of the predictions, comments, I mean, it was difficult to know when to start. But then, 2 minutes and 22 seconds into the game yesterday, you wrote, the writing is on the wall for Cork already. How did you know that?
Because Conor Sweeney comes out, he's been marked by fullback. There's no reason for the fullback to be 6 or 7 yards off him. He was 6 or 7 yards off him. First three or four attacks that Tipperary got, Cork just looked wide open. And as much as, you know, you talk about the great ability that Tipperary have, Jesus, you would expect first things first, you know, Cork to be just manically in their faces. And that's what we spoke about last year or last week when we talked about the psychology. I'd love us to have not talked about tradition last week than talk about it this week, because we'd all be a hell of a lot more
blew
wise.
It, absolutely blew it, blew it.
But just you can't afford to be that far away from your man early on. And that, for me, signals something mentally. And I didn't like to see that, because I would have thought, like, Kieran's analogy last week of hunt or be hunted was brilliant, and you know, it was very obvious from 2 or 3 minutes into the game that Cork was sitting back and going to be hunted. So, and Tipperary have, you know, exceptional players. Some of those players hadn't performed all year, to be honest. But you know, when it came down to it, when Quinlivan kicked his second point, when the camera pans to him, I think after about 10 seconds after we've seen the replay, we get a cheeky smile. That's a player knowing that, you know, things have turned around for him. And it's a player knowing that I just want the ball. And you can see
that. Feel like? What does that feel like in a big match?
There's no better feeling. There really is no better feeling. And like, you know, I had many days like that, but I had some days like that, and I was just screaming out the field, just give me the ball. Like, you know what I mean? Because you just want it. And because you know you have to beat Neil Marker, but you're not even worried. If they switch somebody else across you, you just know that you're on it. And when you're on it as a forward, you're on it. You know what I mean? I hear this thing about people saying, oh, he's a confidence player. Everybody's a confidence player. Do you know what I mean? If you're playing up front and, you know, you kick that first one, it's a lot easier to kick the rest of them. But it was just obvious that, you know, those guys up front were singing yesterday, and, you know, they just wanted the ball. They demanded the ball. You know, the runs were better than they had been. You know, when you look back on the Limerick game, you think, first of all, you know, there's a couple of players playing up front for Tipperary. Probably, if you want to pick them out in particular, Quinlivan not playing with a huge amount of confidence, looks a bit lackluster. It was anything but yesterday. And, you know, that was the change that, I suppose, not only was a real signal to Cork, but it also gave his own players a massive lift. Because, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, those players know that, you know, he is their main man. Yeah, Sweeney's brilliant as well, but Quinlivan makes them tick in so many areas. I like Quinlivan at 14 for, you know, for the period of time he played. I remember Armagh playing Tipperary in the backdoor game, and Quinlivan was a massive handful, you know, in that full forward line. But I think there's a bit more to him. I like to see him as not only somebody who can get in the end of things, but I think he's a good enough playmaker. He's tough enough, he's strong enough, he seems to be fit enough to take those knocks, you know, in that sort of central area. And I think he works probably better there. I'm glad you didn't ask me this question last week, because I would have said get him back into the full forward line. It's just not happening for him, but you know, he eventually turned it around and made it happen.
How do you explain how Cork can turn up to a semi-final and play like that against Kerry, and then 2 weeks later come and play in a Munster final, regardless of the opposition, in a Munster final, and be unbelievably passive in the tackle, not break tackles when they have the ball, show no aggression around the field, with a couple of honourable exceptions, and I think Ian McGuire deserves honourable exception for the way he played around the middle. How do you explain that shift in performance?
It's explained very, very simply, Paul, to be honest. It's explained in the fact that when they went in against Kerry, nobody gave them a shot. It is effectively a free shot, even though Ciarán told us, you know, that they would win the game. But for me, it's a free shot. If Cork lose the game, you know what I mean, people are going to say, well, look at, you know, Cork or Cork, but Kerry, you know, are the biggest challengers we have to Dublin. You know, they're running to a replay on a point. You know, this is, we're talking about the greatest team of all time. You know, Kerry will wipe the floor with Cork. You listen to that. You want to prove those things wrong. You want to win your own corner. You know, the motivation is very, very simple. It's Kerry and Cork. You know, there's obviously a huge rivalry there, border on hatred. So, like, you know, that's the first thing. But the second thing is, you know, going into that game yesterday, the motivation. And it's motivation for a young squad that like, when people talk about, here's the thing, when people talk about Tipperary and the minor, how good they've been at minor, you know, how they've progressed at under 21, Cork are in the exact same position. Cork are used, we're talking about a lot of Cork players that are used to winning things. Do you know what I mean? So, like, the motivation for Cork yesterday should have been about not just winning another game, but about actually winning something, having some silverware in your hands. That's where the motivation should have come from. And I felt that drive wasn't there. But it's simple. It's up here. And people can keep talking about, you know, how, like, and when we get on to Cavan, then we're in a whole new stratosphere of what's going on upstairs, Cavan and Donegal. But from a Cork point of view, they just couldn't find the drive that they had done the last day. They didn't, you know, there was too much of a concentration on where my legs are at after 5 minutes. And, you know what I mean, everybody feels out on their feet after 5 minutes of the game. First thing you think about in a big game is, you know, Jesus, you know, have I done the training that I needed to do? All of a sudden you start to relax into the game. But the biggest point for me was that when the game did settle down a little bit, Tipperary players looked more comfortable on the ball, I thought. I thought the Cork boys looked a little bit more nervous. And that is the weight of expectation. And that is the weight of people saying all week, and players try to avoid all this talk, but the talk of we have to back it up. We must back it up. We have, do you know what I mean? Instead of concentrating more on the performance, and I'm sure, like, I know that it was what Cork's preparation would have been meticulous. And I listened to Ciarán last week and he talked about, you know, how they were breaking it down, all those sort of things, but it still seeps in the players. Do you know what I mean? It's about the shift in mentality from one week to the next. There's no excuse for it, Paul, only that it's sport and it's happening. It's happened for generations. It's happened in professional sport, amateur sport, you know, Olympic Games. You talk about people who find a little bit more, and also on the flip side of that, the people who can't find what they found the previous week. And as I say, it's, you know, sport is, there's a litany of examples of this happening in sport, and this is just the latest in that saga.
Declan, we have to talk about David Power and the job he did, and he was very emotional after the game when he was speaking. And we also have to talk about Colin O'Riordan, whose raw emotion just revealed itself in that brilliant interview with Damien Lawler on RTE after the game. How important in particular was Colin O'Riordan to yesterday's win?
It was massive, Paul. I suppose a lot of the talk down our way for the last couple of weeks was, is he going to be involved and can he be involved? And then when he got clearance from the Swans to play, or to be eligible for the Munster final, the talk came down to then, will he start or what do you do with him? So it was a conundrum for Davy Power in a way, because, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And I saw merits to both sides of it straight away, obviously enough. But there was always also some poor guy who was going to be dropped off to 26 to facilitate Colin, who had been training all year as well. So that was the backlash that David had to be wary of. And in fairness to him, you know, once Colin was available, he had to start. And that was, you know, without question. And to me, it probably was the win of the game in the end. You know, what he did. What I really loved about him, Paul, was when he got the ball, he was breaking through tackles. Whereas nowadays, the fella will feel a bit of contact, and his natural instinct is to turn and hand pass the ball back the way and recycle it again and not to get turned over. But he drove forward, he put the arm across the opponent's body and got the front foot and got through. And the thing that surprised me most, Paul, and Kieran will probably know about a lot more obviously than I would have this, but his ball kicking, the kicking into the forwards three or four times was absolutely top notch. You know, for a fella that hadn't probably kicked the ball, a round ball in 5 years. So that side of his game, so once he had that perfected over the last 4 or 5 weeks, you know, it gave great impetus to our forwards because, number one, you had a clean ball winner, primary possession, and number two, he was able to deliver a ball. Whereas, as I said before, most people will win primary possession. They'll throw it to someone or they'll pass it back for someone else to do it. So he was incredible, Paul. Like, and to see, like, you know, we were all crying after the final whistle, but like we all went into tears again listening to his interview and what it meant to him, because we said it back in 15 when we lost him to Ozzie Roos. Like, that was just, you know, for that man, he won a minor medal at 15. He played senior probably at 17 or 18 against Galway. I remember watching him in Tullamore. He was exceptional. And then to hear you'd be delighted from on one side and you'd be devastated on the other side that you're losing this lad. So again, COVID worked out again, Paul. He was home and he was available. So like David, as I said, had a big call to make. If we lost, would it be a different story? Probably. But he can just tell them all, go away now. And, you know, he's justified in what he did.
We like to think about football now and the preparation that goes into it and the amount of aspects of the game. But really, this idea of emotion being at the heart of it still.
Yeah, like, there's desire as well, Paul. Like Oisín hinted there, like it's like, I was never one for psychologists or anything like this. Or like, there's tactics and there's, you know, obviously you have to listen to managers and all that. But when you're across that white line, like Oisín said, like, you know if you're on it or not. Like, and that's the way I'd be looking at yesterday. And from the start, like, Conor Sweeney to get the first 2 points from play that he got without a hand being laid on him was just, you know, we'd all love that in a Munster final. Like, I remember you played finals or matches and you'd have a clip around the ear or you'd have someone digging in the guts before any ball came your way. So those lads, Conor and Mikey, knew then that they would have had the freedom in the park. And by God, the day, like, they turned up. Conor has done it. And Oisín said again, like, Mikey had been probably a bit off form for the last couple of games. But like, the points he kicked yesterday, like, you have to say, you know, we're out of the top drawer, and we knew then something special was coming down the line. And the cheeky grin did, you know, I was proud of that one myself, because you just knew he was enjoying it. He knew he wanted the ball every time, and every time he got the ball, they probably knew that they could conjure up something between the two of them, because like, they have a great understanding between the two of them. But again, they got it easy for the first half. The Cork defenders were, I suppose, it was a big ask for 5 22-year-olds to go out and mark experienced lads like when living in Sweeney too, you know. So maybe Cork got that a bit wrong, even though like, they had won a lot underage. But like, it comes down to desire, it comes down to that bit of hunger, bit of drive, and a bit of confidence that you get when things are going your way. And Tip have been like that in the last few years, that if they get a hold in you, if they get on the front foot, they can turn the screw. It's just we don't do it consistently enough, but it's nice when it works out on a big day.
Kieran, are Cork footballers too nice?
No. No, I don't know. I don't know where that came from. I wouldn't think so.
Well, it comes down from the space that Conor Sweeney got, the space that Michael Quinlivan got, and all the way through the game, when Tipperary were running through, you never really got the sense that a Cork player was going to make a really serious physical contribution.
Yeah, I don't think branding him as not being or as being too nice is the way to put that. I think, like Oisín and Declan touched on it there, but it was just that they were off the mark, Paul. When you look at it, and Declan did touch on it there in relation to the experience, right? And this is never an excuse for a Munster final, but you know, eight players for Cork that were used for under the age of 22. Conal Kennedy was the only player that was under 25 for the starting team for Tipperary. And to me, and we spoke about it, that first 10 minutes of that game was always going to decide what way it was going to go. And you know, unfortunately, Conor did get away a couple of times and got some really good scores early on, and that impacted the team, I think, from a mental point of view as well. But look, like, take a small step back and look at where Cork's at the moment in relation to the youth that's there. They are, as much as people hate to hear it, they are in a developmental stage in relation to Cork football. And Cork is put so high up in relation to expectation for everyone in Cork. But there needs to be a small element of patience with this group of players, and understand that they're coming. They learned a massive lesson yesterday, but I think that will stand to them in time. But I absolutely don't think they're too nice. I think there's plenty of aggression in the group. It's just finding it and bringing it to light at the right time.
One more question before we go to the Ulster final. This Declan, do it's a really good point that Ciarán has made there about the age profile of the Tipperary team. Is there anything coming in Tipperary that will replace Quinlivan and Sweeney and O'Riordan when he goes back? Or is this a generational thing and then Tipperary will disappear back into the fog again for another decade or two decades or three decades?
That's the big worry we have, Paul. We knew, with David Power, he was involved in the development squads back to drive football, and you know, it got a lot of traction. We got a lot out of it. We got a lot of players. We got a lot of success. And unfortunately, that, you know, that same developmental issue or thing isn't there. It's not in situ. So we basically have to make the most of it. You know, there's an awful lot of young good footballers coming through, Paul. There's no doubt about it. But you asked the question: can they replace Sweeney, Quinlivan, Arir? Well, Colin is probably different. He's going to be gone anyway.
Yeah,
but can they replace Sweeney and Quinlivan? You know, can any county in Ireland replace those two? And that's the reality we're going to be set with in a few years' time. But we can't account for that now. But to me, the structures probably aren't in place to get the amount that we got out of what we got out of 15 years ago. It's definitely not in place. So I think now, obviously, we have to make hay while the sun shines. But it would be a pity for this to fall back under the carpet again and not to rise its head again for another 10 or 15 years. Obviously enough, we're probably in transition from underage. We're not competing well. We're getting well beaten. We haven't won an under 20 match or an under 21 match, I think, in a while. And I was involved myself in under 21. We got beaten by Limerick after extra time. So that doesn't bode well. You know, you need that bit coming through the whole time. But saying that, we will always have footballers willing to play for Tip, and the quality of that is you know, you get exceptional players coming along every now and then that you'll never replace. So what we have to try and do now is hope that this win will make another generation want to play football. You know, I hate to say this, but you go back, you look at John Maher for you know, he went in with the Tip hurlers this year, didn't make the 26 for the game at the weekend.
He'd have been full back, presumably.
A certainty full back, Paul. You know, so that to me, Paul Maher from Kilsheen and Kilcash, same way, was on the football team last year, didn't make the hurling panel this year. You know, so we have guys like that. You know, it's easy to say it now after the event, but like, how must they be feeling? You know, like John Maher, like, was probably the best hurler and footballer in Tipperary this year. And, you know, to watch both games at home at the weekend is, you know, to me, it's you know, it's a disaster. It's a disaster for football. It's a disaster for himself, but that's the choice he made, you know. So I feel really, really sorry for him.
Would you bring him back into the panel for an All-Ireland semi-final?
I wouldn't, no. No, I wouldn't, because, you know, you have to live by your choices too. And that's, unfortunately, the way it is. He picked the hurling at the start of the year, but, like, my God, what a difference. And we're saying it all along, like, my own club mate, Peter Atchison, emigrated to Dubai, yeah. You know, one of the top players in the country. You know, you'd love to have him back. You know, and we've said it all along, if we had Lee McGrath, you know, the minor captain of 11, went travelling, he didn't get back with COVID. You know, so there's players out there that would add, you know, massively to this setup and for the next 3 or 4 years. But you have to go with the hand you're dealt with, Paul. And to answer your question, I would be worried for what's coming down the line. But I think we'll enjoy this for, and hope these lads have another 2 or 3 years in them and see, can we build again?
it didn't seem possible at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon that the emotion that was on display or had been on display down in Cork could be replicated up in Armagh, but it was at least matched by the scenes after the full-time whistle. And I think it's really interesting that I think it's related to COVID as well. There were long stretches where the highest incidents of COVID in Ireland, the highest incidence rate in Ireland was in County Cavan. And Raymond Galligan, the Cavan goalkeeper, gave an extraordinary interview on BBC after the game yesterday, where he talked about the people from his own parish who had lost their lives. He cried most of the way through that interview, and it was a very moving thing to watch. And his interview followed on from an interview in which the team manager, Mickey Graham, had actually had to walk out of the interview. He was crying that much that he couldn't speak. Oisín, what was it like to be in Armagh yesterday to see what Cavan did?
Truly unbelievable. Truly privileged to be there. The amount of people that texted me after the game and said how privileged I should have been to be there, and I was. And the moment was not lost on me. Grown men crying. I'm staying clear of any Christmas movies this week because I am on the verge. I'm going to have a cry. I know I'm going to cry at some stage this week. I think it started on Saturday night, and it moved on from there. But the one thing I don't want to get lost in all of this is how good Cavan were as individuals, but also tactically. It was perfect. It wasn't good. It wasn't almost perfect. It was perfect.
What was perfect?
Everything about them. Before the game, I don't know if you listened to Mickey Hart, but he said, like, you know, Cavan cannot push up on the kickouts because that is, you know, it's football suicide. And what they did was they did a false press. They put 5v6 and they worked like demons. To try and stop that that kick out. They wanted the ball to go to the middle of the field because they fancied themselves out there. And they also, by playing 5 against 6, they were able to play Killian Brady in the and what I will also would from now on be known as the Conor Callaghan area. I know we're never that's a game on Saturday night we're never going to speak of, but but the 3 kicks or 4 kicks that Tuxton kicked to Conor Callaghan in that position. Patton has that in the locker. They've been doing it for years. Murphy flicks the ball on. Ray McHugh runs onto it. They took that completely out of the equation. Michael Langan is the best up-and-coming footballer in Ulster. Has been shooting the lights out. Was the difference when they played against Tyrone. Was brilliant against Armagh. They put Killian Brady on him. And Killian Brady headed for the full forward line. Now, nobody would see Killian Brady heading for the full forward line. He was named in the middle of the field. He started on him at wing back. He's played in the full back line. And he headed for corner forward. And Langan was forced to follow him. And he followed him for at least 20 minutes of the game until Killian Brady got the black card. So they took Langan out of the game in that way. No surprise that, you know, when Killian Brady gets the black card, Donegal win that next period 7-1. And to be honest, only for that black card, I'm convinced that Cavan would have won the game a lot more comfortably. They were breaking the lines, ball through the hands. If anybody who was there, or maybe you could pick it up on TV, I'm not sure. But when an opposing goalkeeper sets the ball down and you're playing against Donegal, he only has it sitting on the tee and all you can hear is time, 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 time. And they start this, and it starts from the full forward line. It goes through the rest of the players. It goes into the stand. It goes to the subs. And they put serious pressure on them. But you know what I loved about Raymond Galligan? Raymond Galligan would have stood there all day until he was ready to kick it. Yes, he had to kick a couple in the middle of the field. Yes, they lost a couple around the middle of the field. But I tell you what he was doing. He was getting distance on the kicks. So as soon as they come down, it wasn't simple. Now, it looked a little bit simple for maybe that 10 or 15 minute period when Donegal got on top, it looked as if they were playing against Armagh again, where, you know, it was simple just to knock the ball over the bar very, very easily. They looked very accurate. They had no Donegal had no wides in the first half. Cavan had six, but Cavan had to be buoyed going in at half time. And like, if you look at their second half performances, you look at the performance in extra time against Monaghan, they obviously have legs. Look, I could go on all day talking about them because they just brought something to the championship that I haven't seen for some time. And in a time, you're right, Paul, in a time where it is about processes and it's about video analysis, about all those things, what is wrong with a bit of raw emotion sometimes? So if you can imagine, Cavan are tactically right. So they're going to... Now, what you have to have then is you have to have players to implement that. But you have to put another layer on top. If you're rank underdogs, you have to put another layer on top of that. And that is that bit of feistiness, that bit of aggression, that in your face, that not to back down. I seen Neil McGee having a go at Garrod McKeown, and it was about 20 yards from me, and he kept talking to him. Garrod McKeown just stared through him. Normally, players get involved, you know, he gets them off their game. They just were staring right through them. They looked like a team who believed in exactly in everything that Mickey Graham had sold them for the last week. It's another testament also to, like, people keep saying Cavan have played 6 weeks in a row. That I don't know about you guys, but that wouldn't faze me. I'd play 6 weeks in a row because you know why? You're doing nothing in between, and I hate the training. most players I know. Not hate it, it's a strong word, but dislike it. And they're going from one game to the next. All they're doing is recovery in between. Like Jerry Smith, and I'm sorry I never got to give him a shout out yesterday. Jared Smith, I'm sorry I never got to give him a shout out yesterday when I was working on BBC. But him, Luke Fortune, Killian Brady. And that's we're not talking about the big boys. You look at Oisin Kiernan,
Pádraig Faulkner, fullback.
Pádraig Faulkner, but look, Oisin Kiernan, this time 2 years ago was getting treated with chemotherapy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And extraordinary, really.
Yeah, extraordinary. But the point he kicked, the point was absolute. Like, it was ridiculous. He was on his wrong side, left.
Were you shouting at him not to shoot at that point?
No, I was shouting at Garrod McKeown and got the free kick. And I was shouting, "Jesus, keep the ball! You know, keep the ball."
And what happened?
Canavan said,
"Coaching at this stage."
I don't think I was shouting it, but I was definitely saying it. And then the next thing, he didn't obviously have a lot of options on, and he kicked it, and I went, "Oh no!" And Patton comes out fisted it, and Canavan sticks in the back of the net.
Do you actually coach teams as well as be a pundit?
I just thought that was the perfect time to hold on to the ball. I didn't think it was going to take a goal to win the game, but obviously. But Conor Madden also set a brand new record yesterday for the person who came on and off the field most. He was on twice in the first half as a blood sub.
It was like the hokey cokey there at one stage. He was going in and out.
On, then he gets a black card from himself. Then he comes back on, gets a goal, gets 2 points. Every single time, every play of the ball he got yesterday, he had a shot. I love that about him.
Yeah.
Was it desperation, lads, that we were looking to Donegal to challenge Dublin? Now, we've actually managed to avoid talking about Saturday night, so we'll try and leave that for another couple of minutes. But can we just talk about Donegal? Is it desperation that we were looking at Donegal as genuine challengers or potential challengers to Dublin?
From what I saw at Donegal, I up to that game, I thought they looked very, very impressive. I thought they looked very well organised. I thought they were physically in great shape. They had a couple of guys that were kind of really starting to come into their own. They had Murphy was hopping off the ground. He looked light. He looked fit. He looked like he was kind of going to do damage anytime he got the ball. But yesterday, they just seemed off where they had set the pace at in previous games. Now, to be fair to Cavan, I thought they were outstanding, and Oisin kind of gave a good detailed analysis on it there in relation to just their structure and ability to actually stick to a game plan and do it right and just be careful with the ball, make right decisions. But up to that game, I thought Donegal were the closest team to Dublin. And I don't think I'd go back on that, just based on what I had seen. I think, as I said, they've super athletes. I think they'll come back a lot better next year.
If we can't avoid this any longer. We have to go to Saturday night and what happened in Croke Park. I think part of the joy of Sunday was related to the despair of Saturday night. And I know if you were a hardcore Dub with a sharp memory of the days when Meade used to come to the capital and beat up Dubs for fun, you probably enjoyed the match. In fact, you really enjoyed the match. But for the rest of us, it was I think, a painful experience, notwithstanding watching how brilliant Dublin were. Colm O'Rourke described it as a humiliation. Kieran Whelan said that the rest of Leinster were psychologically smashed at this point. Oisin, how did you feel watching the Leinster football final?
Pretty devastated. I couldn't believe how poor Meath were. I suppose football has definitely changed a lot. I quit inter-county football in 08, and I think it's changed and developed so much since then. But I don't think that the team I played on would have stood around and let what happened the other night, regardless of how good the Dubs are, how somebody didn't throw a slap or a, you know, and I'm not condoning that, but at least then you know that the opposition is alive and well, and you know, they're willing to do something outside of the norm. But to sit there and just take it, you know, I suppose that was the most disappointing thing. The Dubs were very, very good, but let's face it, lads, like if you're going to be let play like that, you know, if you're going to let the best team, if we're talking about the best team that has ever played Gaelic football, and you're going to turn around, you're going to let them play, you're going to offer no intensity, you're not going to get tackles in, it's pretty desperate. And to be
it's
honest,
more than that though, Oisin, as well though, isn't it?
I think it is Paul, because I think that Meath, you know, I spoke last week about Meath seemed to be getting the most out of what they had. And, you know, the best they could muster the other night was to be absolutely humiliated. You know, it's really worrying times. It's worrying times. And look at if Dublin continued to do that to the last... In the last two games, we're in serious ball. I forget, as far as Leinster concerned, you know, Leinster's been a dead duck for some time now. But if this manifests itself now into an All Ireland series, I don't know what we're going to do.
There is a thing
We'll have to chase the Dubs. That's all we can do.
There is a thing as well, though. It's not just what you do when Dublin have the ball. It's when you have the ball. And it seems to me to be impossible to beat Dublin if you don't mind the ball. And Meade did not mind the ball at all on Saturday night. They gave it back to Dublin. They found new ways to give it back to Dublin, actually, in the course of the game. And if you do that, sure, you're out on your feet after 20 minutes. You can't get close enough even to get a slap at somebody. And Declan, you were there.
Yeah, I was lucky to be part of the Bloody Sunday celebrations, Paul, which was, you know, something I'll never forget, and it was an honour to represent every tip footballer, every tip person up there, you know, on such a
different type of emotion there on Saturday night.
Oh, it was eerie, Paul. Like myself and Alan Brogan were the flag bearers. I'm glad that's all we had to do, because like we were wrecks going out onto the field, because it was just one of those, you know, everything was blackened out, and you know, just to be a part of the whole thing. And then Brendan Gleeson, the voice, started off, and you know, it was an amazing night, Paul. You know, I haven't won an awful lot in my time, but it's up there with the best that I've done. You know, it's to be asked, and it was a privilege and honour. But after the ceremony, like I watched the Dubs warming up, Paul, and like, the condition of them is incredible. It's just unbelievable, and I love watching warm ups. I'd always learn something for myself, or when you go on coaching, I love watching it, but there's nothing scientific or Einstein you to the Dubs warm up. It's basic. It's getting through things. It's everyone knowing their job. And like you said there, you know, Meade, I'm in no position to have a go at Meade after all the hammerings I've received down through the years. And, you know, so, but it was just, there was twice they got in behind the Dublin defence for goals and the trigger should have been pulled. I didn't, they got swallowed up. I think Jordan Martin might have got a point out of one of them. And next minute, Cluxton puts it down to the tee, as Oisin alluded to there with Patton in the goal, a big long kick out to Conor O'Callaghan, and it ends up with Kilkenny and Dean Rock in the back of the net, and game over after 10 minutes. So it's, you know, Oisin said we're chasing the Dubs, we are, and that's the scary part. There's no let up with them. They could have scored, you know, they could have scored another couple of goals, and they were a bit wayward in their shot selection as well. So, but for me, it's like, where do you go? You know, I've been in that position for long periods of my career. Where do you go? Where do you start back? But there's a lot of soul searching to be done there, because it was never a game. And that's the real pity. Like, whereas Tip and Cavan, we went for it yesterday. Regardless of who we were playing, we had a go. We said we're going to play, deliver long ball in, be on the front foot, have a go and no regrets. Like, I don't think Meade can say the same.
Gonna go. Sorry, Paul. Just on the, you know, the Meade getting in behind and not pulling the trigger. The Martin Riley yesterday, he run in along the end line and like people are shouting at him, fisted over the bar. And I imagine that's a decision that was made during the week that, listen, if we get in behind, we'll go for goal, because it's going to take goals probably to win the game, because that's what the way they would have felt about it. And, you know, Meade was so hesitant. It was scary in that situation. But sorry, I just wanted to talk about that one, because, you know, it was a simple and easy thing was to fist it over the bar, and he chose not to do that, which I thought was, you know, which looked positive and felt positive.
The only thing I thought about him that time was he did have a runner the far side of at the post who was coming in his own at the back post wearing number four. Much in all, as you would despise the idea of someone wearing number four scoring a goal in a championship match, it was a simple hand pass across and a slap in.
Paul, do you think the two boys are sitting there? Do you think the two boys are sitting there? I think they will pass it.
No. No, would you have passed it?
No.
No. You're on.
What I'd say, it's an interesting one, because considering the amount of goals Meade have got over the last couple of games, but for me, Meade looked like, and as you said there, Paul, they were running into tackles, they were getting turned over. It was like they didn't have a plan B. It looked like this was the way they were going to play. All of a sudden, it's not working. We'll keep trying to do it. But they kept getting turned over, and Dublin kept them on the back foot and punishing them. When you're coming up against the likes of Dublin, and look, they were very, very impressive, but you need a plan B and potentially a plan C and even a plan D. Like the way they mix it and play the game, you need to understand that throughout certain parts in the game, and particularly now with the water breaks that were added this year, you need to structure almost around how Dublin play, which is an indictment in I suppose, how good Dublin are. And as I said, everyone's chasing him. But in order to break them down, you can't go into a game against Dublin with just one plan. Maybe Meade didn't do that. Maybe Meade just left it too late and decided to flip it at a certain stage. But Dublin had the game over at that point. But I just think in relation to going into a game against Dublin, you just need to be prepared for all things that are going to happen in the game, different scenarios. You know, you take a couple of points lead, Dublin take, you know, a 5-point lead. How do we get it back? Do we shut it down? Do we be more offensive? Do we, you know, play with more width? As we know, Dublin like to go down through the middle. So there's almost this preparation that needs to go into Dublin that is next level now. And in saying that, I think it's preparation that the way that the game's going anyway, the fact that we're all chasing them, high performance, preparation, opposition analysis, all this sort of work that needs to go in now is at a very, very high level. And if you don't have that work done and you're coming in against the Dubs in Croke Park in a Leinster final, then they'll punish you.
I know Pat Spillane said the other night that, you know, serious analysis was pointless, but I do think that other teams can get something out of it, as in don't sort of things that you cannot do against them. I suppose that's maybe one thing that, you know, Cavan will look at, you know, and as obviously
don't give them the ball, be number one.
Yeah, probably not give them the ball, give them the opportunities. But also I think, you know, like, don't let McCarthy wield the influence over the game that he can. I mean, like, I've been saying this for some time now, lads. If I was playing against Dublin in the morning, I'd man mark McCarthy, and I'd put somebody on him that is willing to sacrifice their game. I just think he's that important to them now, and I think me just let him have way too much influence on the way they play. You know, he come back in, fill holes, and he's just saunter about and do whatever he wanted. And you know, I've been saying that for some time. That's the first point. That's the first. I suppose that's the first nail that I would hammer if I was playing against the Dubs. But look, they have a lot of things you have to do, but there's a couple of don'ts maybe that people could get out of the game the other night.
Declan, you mightn't have heard this earlier, but about a month ago, these two lads were talking about how Dublin's discipline had slipped a lot, you know, that they didn't have the bench that they had previously, that step back. Do you see this?
Hey, you need to get rid of the two of those, Pat. Yeah. they're bringing down the reputation of this.
Just the two of us, Declan, will kill you.
So I'm not going to add to that, Pat. I quit. No, you know, I would love to say we're potentially going to face this on All-Ireland final day. I'll take on Oisín's don'ts and I'll pass them on to the tip management. they might work out, you know. But we potentially Dublin, and no disrespect to Cavan, Mayo or Tip, they could beat the pick of the three teams, and that's the scary part. They're just a machine that, you know, we all thought Kerry are the next team, Donegal are the next team, but they're all after falling as well. So you know, I said lucky enough to watch the game and to see their subs warming up, Philly McMahon, Cormac Costello, Eric Lown, you know, it's Philip McMenamin, you know, they're just, you know, coming off the bench ready for a rattle at it again, and as eager and enthusiastic, which I find strange because, you know, again, not to be disrespectful, but I hated being a sub. I you know, it was, then again, if I was a sub and I had 4 or 5 All-Ireland medals in my back pocket, it might be different, but they were just mad to get on the field, Paul, and have some input and put their hand up for a semi-final inclusion, you know, but they're not going away. Cluxton, you know, I agree totally with Oisín. Like, McCarthy is just an engine. He is unbelievable. He doesn't stop going. And I agree totally there. You nail him down and you have some bit of a chance, but Cluxton inside in the goal, I was watching him. He had to run around the 21 and the 13 to warm up. He was so inactive and so cold on the night, you know. So, but it's scary thought. You know, but would we love a rattle at him? Would Mayo love a rattle at him? Cavan will certainly love a rattle at him and see what we can bring to the table. So I can't throw stones yet, Paul, about Meath, because, you know, we could end up facing the same torment as well. So, you know, you feel sorry for Meath. Like, no one goes out to play poorly. No one goes out to get tactics wrong. No one, like, you know, and the same in Kerry, same in Cork. Like, it's easy to throw in the boot. But that's the way the cookie crumbled this year. And, you know, they'll all get back on the horse again, but it's very hard, very, very hard to look past Dublin.
I want to look back, just take a jump back 100 years to the All-Ireland semi-finals that were played 100 years, the 1920 All-Ireland semi-finals. Tipperary played Mayo in the first game, and it's probably the nature of football that the final score in that Tipperary-Mayo semi-final of 1920 was Tipperary 1 goal and 5 points, Mayo 1 goal.
Yeah.
Now, the other semi-final was Dublin Cavan, and Dublin won 3-6 to 1-3, but the game was played in Navan. Oisín, where should this game between Dublin and Cavan be played?
Well, it definitely shouldn't be played in Croke Park. My own personal preference is Newry. It's nice and close to me. It's only 30 minutes away, but but I think. In all seriousness, this is a no-brainer now. And I think, you know, all I've heard all year is about the integrity of competitions, integrity this, integrity that. This should not need to be a campaign from Cavan. This should be something that the GAA say, listen, lads, you know, in fairness, integrity, we're not talking about safety, we're not talking about crowds, we're not talking about
revenue
or letting the most amount of people see a spectacle like this. We could play this anywhere. You know, as far as, you know, playing on, like, the argument is probably going to be the surface, but, you know, there's a couple of pitches that can take this game absolutely no problem. And I think it's a no-brainer. I think the first thing that should be done is the Cavan should get a phone call and ask if they would like the game moved out, because maybe Cavan want to go to Croke Park.
Yeah, they might want to play in Croke Park.
Yeah, maybe they do. But, you know, whatever about going to Croke Park. You've seen, I suppose, the if you want a comparison, watch Meath versus Dublin in the league in Parnell Park.
Yeah.
And watch the difference with the other night. So for me, it's a no-brainer. And I hope that, you know, rather than this being reactive and us having another Newbridge or Noah, that somebody up there is proactive and gets the ball rolling on this ASAP.
We have to take the final out of Dublin as well, so, Oisin.
Well, there's no... honestly, like, you know, the final normally has to be played in Croke Park, obviously, and it probably will be. There's a more concrete argument for playing the final there. But that should be up for discussion as well. And if you have a strong enough county board behind you, Tipping Dublin could be anywhere.
Kieran.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I would say, and Oisin's right, the county board, Cavan County Board, should be consulted on it at the very least. And maybe it should be talked through. It certainly shouldn't be ignored. I've played in Croke Park a few times. I think look, I can't really comment on I suppose I haven't played there in a long, long time, but in relation to the size and the scale of it and Dublin being used to playing on it, it is a significant advantage. I suppose that the question came a little bit left field there. I would say that Cavan County Board need to be consulted on it. I do think it's something that needs to be discussed, but needs to be discussed sooner rather than later. And that's all I can really comment on it. I do think the All-Ireland final will need to stay in Croke Park, and that's, yeah, again based back to tradition, that the famous word that we talked about last couple of weeks.
She wants to play it in Cross McLean, in fairness.
Worth a try.
we probably can't manage that. One more thing to do. The best players of the provincial championship in each province. Best player and best newcomer in Ulster. Oisin.
Thomas Galligan and Thomas Galligan.
Where do we stand on that, lads?
I had Thomas Galligan as well. I had
Garrod McKieran, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the same, yeah.
Just two standout players, I thought. And we didn't really touch on it too much, but I thought Thomas Galligan yesterday was outstanding. Big moments in the game where he just won primary possession, just willed himself into the game, put his body on the line. It was just a great performance. But I just think he's certainly stepped onto the stage now and has stamped his profile onto the upper side of the scale in relation to players. And obviously Garrod McKiernan just being able to consistently do it over the last number of years, and again just standing out, monster around the ground, his footballing ability for such a big man, left and right. He just really stood out for me.
So I would have been with you, Oisin, but you're beating 2-1 on that one. I would make a shout out for Padraig Mogan as the newcomer year. I think he's had an excellent year for Donegal, although he was quiet yesterday. Connacht, best footballer in Connacht and the best newcomer.
I had Owen McLaughlin as best newcomer. I was actually between him and Tommy Conroy. I thought that they were just guys that have really kind of stepped up and have stood out. In relation to the best, like it's hard to look past the likes of Aidan O'Shea. I thought, like, you know, although he hasn't, I don't think, got back to his, you know, real best, he's been kind of in full forward, out centre forward, out midfield. It's been a bit of a mixed bag for him, but I think he's certainly shown that, you know, he's getting ready for a big semi-final.
For me, Killian O'Connor and Tommy Conroy.
Yeah. That's what I had as well, yeah.
I would have gone for Paddy Durkin as the best footballer, but Killian O'Connor, we go with Killian O'Connor for that.
Well, Shane Walsh was close too.
Munster. Declan, do you want to have a go at Munster?
All tip. How many can I name?
This is a giant award, is it? Sorry about this, Kieran. This is
That's all right. That's fine.
Sorry, Kieran. I have a Cork man in there. I've Conor Sweeney picked for the player of the year. Obviously, yes. You know, just for consistency alone. You know, when we were struggling with Quinlivan and the big lads, you know, he kept us going, and only for that score against Limerick from the sideline, we wouldn't be talking about this today. So he was incredible. I think for me, the young player like Sean Pouter, you know, I know he's after going through hell for the last couple of years with injuries, and obviously we were delighted not to see him on the pitch yesterday. But like the semi final, he was incredible. I don't think we would have handled him either yesterday if he was on the field. So you know, I think he was incredible, and it's an awful pity. You need to sort his hamstrings out here on some bit, because we're all at a loss not seeing him play. But as regards ourselves, when he was announced that he wasn't part of it or wasn't playing, it was a huge boost. Because, you know, you don't need, as Oisin said about Cavan, was it Brady or Clark going forward, you know, Langan had to chase back. We would have been doing the exact same thing with Pouter, you know. So great player.
Leinster.
I had McCarthy and Bugler.
James McCarthy and Sean Bugler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kieran.
I had Paddy Small and McCarthy. Look, it was a toss up between McCarthy and Kilkenny. I thought Kilkenny,
yeah.
Yeah, his last few games were outstanding. And again, being able to mix it full forward, centre forward, and just being able to link up play. Just what he's doing it time and time again. So they were the players for me.
Yeah, Kilkenny and Bugler, yeah.
Okay, so Sean Bugler, I know Sean Bugler. He's in the club that my kids play in up here. He is a tremendous young fella. On the Saturday after Dublin won the last All-Ireland, Sean Bugler came up and into the nursery, did the morning in the nursery. He takes a minor team in the club. He's up around the place. Also, I'm finding it's very hard to say, but I would have gone with Jordan Morris, because I thought that even Jordan Morris kept going to the end for me last Saturday. Kicked a couple of points. Fair enough, yeah. It was late on, but I would have pushed for him. So last question on this then. If the Player of the Year award was being given out after the provincial finals, who's getting it?
Thomas Gallagher for me.
You
can't give it anybody in Leinster because there was no championship.
Outside
series of exhibition matches.
I'd probably go Conor Sweeney.
Yeah, I'd have to say, but like your old McKiernan and Thomas Gallagher have been super as well. So it's I go with Sweeney. Obviously, you have to go with Sweeney.
Yeah, I'd go with James McCarthy. There's no football next weekend. We'll have to let the magic of last Sunday sustain us. But we will be back next week with an in-depth preview of the All-Ireland Senior Football Semi-Finals, which will feature two Division 3 teams. So it's Mayo against Tipperary and Dublin against Cavan. With thanks a million to Renault for getting us here, we'll talk to you lads again next week.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.